Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of 24 books, 34 short stories, and countless articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this quest to raise your output to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 429. Today, Ian says, inspired by the fascinating discussion with Vega about interactive fiction, I realized that we all get jaded at times and wondered, do you have any pointers on palate cleansers, like reading outside the canon, both in the areas of nonlinear fiction and in non-Western fiction? I have not consumed a lot of nonlinear fiction in book form, simply because most of it tends to be literary fiction, which I tend to hate. Hate. That said, if you like that sort of thing, Salman Rushdie is amazing. He can actually hold my attention in a genre I hate, and I don't love his stuff because I hate that whole genre of fiction. But he holds my attention anyway, and that's a fairly high bar to clear. Other people find good luck with writers like Toni Morrison, who, frankly, is who put me off that whole genre of fiction, so take it what you will. James Joyce is basically impenetrable, but he does the nonlinear thing pretty well. And, of course, if you go into time travel fiction, of course, you can get all sorts of apparently nonlinear stuff that really isn't. The early Quentin Tarantino films are fantastic nonlinear storytelling, and I highly recommend them. The Usual Suspects, another one. Neo-noir in the early 90s was a hotbed of really great experimental narrative structures, and it did very well. If you don't like neo-noir and you don't have a high tolerance for violence, gore, bad language, ugly behavior, and despicable characters, you might not get a lot of mileage out of that. But if you do, that would be one place to look. If anyone out there has suggestions for other writers to go look up or filmmakers whose work we should look at for this kind of thing, please do say so, because that would be great. For some reason, Terry Gilliam is leaping to mind. He's done a lot of stuff that doesn't feel linear, even though it is. Tideland and Brazil leap readily to mind, both of which were beautiful, but I don't think they quite fit the question. As far as the non-Western canon, I think you'll find the most accessible stuff coming out of India. Partly because, if you do a sort of taxonomic cultural breakdown, the Western culture starts on the western banks of the Aegean back 3500 BC when the Ionians were kicked out of Turkey. And everything in the Western canon sort of descends from that or its immediate forebearers. So, going back to Sumer and whatnot, the Enuma Elish, the Epic of Gilgamesh. Those more ancient sources are really good for reading. They will connect and crystallize a lot of things about the Western storytelling tradition that aren't otherwise readily apparent to the typical or even the fairly well-educated Western reader. However, they are not exactly Western literature. They are Indo-European literature, which is the broader cultural family to which Western culture belongs. Indo-European culture groups include the Russians, the Persians, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, all of whom have incredible mythic traditions, all of which are worth reading up on, both their ancient mythic traditions and the more recent cultural traditions from the last 1,000 years. India is also part of the Indo-European family, and you will find in Indian mythology and culture the most exotic in terms, and by exotic I'm not fetishizing, what I mean is the most foreign feeling, the most alien feeling types of stories that still somehow feel like they belong to the same storytelling tradition, because they do. So it's a good, especially reading the Rig Veda, the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, those sorts of things are really good for finding the outer edge of Indo-European culture. Outside of that, you have the Oriental culture block. Mongolian, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, and Vietnamese, Thai also, and also Indonesian and Micronesian. All of that are the Oriental cultural block, with Indonesia and Micronesia having a very divergent and interesting tradition of its own. Again, the mythologies are fascinating, they're well worth reading, and among expatriate Chinese, expatriate Vietnamese, and expatriate Koreans, you have a lot of really interesting novel traditions feeding into the Western canon very recently, whether it's first, second, or third generation writers. People like Amy Tan leaps readily to mind. No other names are leaping readily to mind because when I go that far east, I tend much more to read the mythology than the novels, just a matter of personal taste. But, like, Confucian folktales and Japanese folktales are fascinating. A whole different way of looking at everything in the world. And, of course, you get a taste of that kind of divergent view watching, for example, anime, especially if you watch it subtitled rather than dubbed, because they do tend to change the stories when they dub them. They don't necessarily do that when they subtitle them. But anime and manga tend to be fairly accessible to the Western mind because they're a point of cross-fertilization. It's Eastern storytelling using Western stylistic devices. So by recognizing the stylistic devices, the Western mind is more likely to feel comfortable enough to immerse itself in non-Western concerns, story structures, ways of thinking, etc. Harder to find are direct translations of great Japanese novels, but if you can, ooh, they are amazing! Strange from our point of view, but amazing. A whole different way of conceiving of story than we normally think about, and yet it's accessible because it's still very human in its concerns. I don't have any good resources on West African or Sub-Saharan African novelists and storytellers, or if I do, then they are stacked in my mind with Western culture, even though they shouldn't be, because that's where I encountered them. So if anyone has any good recommendations for authors, either novelists or folklorists from Sub-Saharan Africa and West Africa, I would love to hear about it. And I will share that information on the podcast. And of course, there's loads of rich stuff in Polynesian culture, which is a bleed over from Micronesia and Indonesian culture. And a lot of that has become accessible to us through the Hawaiians. And, you know, again, like Native American cultures, very varied, broad, it's a cultural family, all sorts of individual mythoses, but they share a kind of common mythic structure. As I alluded, same with Native American cultures, and you can break those down by the coastal Indians, the plains Indians, and the Appalachian and East Coast Indians. And all of those different culture groups had their own flavor and mythological structure, all of which are fascinating, some of which have had a serious, deep impact on American government and thinking, despite all the awful crap that went on between the American government and all of these tribes. And then, of course, you get Mesoamerican culture is another culture group that's really seriously cool, fascinating to read. What has been translatable from Aztec and Mayan culture, what was preserved by the Spanish missionaries. Really, really cool stuff. And of course, being that my mother was raised in Peru, I have a special soft spot in my heart for the Amazonian Indians and the Inca civilization and the Quechua language, which I don't speak, but wish I did. And that's one of the reasons I gravitated towards doing the audiobook for Crud Rat, because Gail Carriger spent a lot of time as an archaeologist working on ancient civilizations along the spine of the Andes. And so much of that research made it into the alien culture building in Crud Rat that I felt when I was reading it like I had kind of come home to my ancestral adopted culture. Two or three ways that I could recommend approaching a non-Western cultural canon is to look at the popular culture and to look at the ancient culture, and look at them as being part of each other, like you would if you were coming into the West from outside. You would look at Greek mythology and the Bible and the current bestsellers. I would do the same sort of thing when learning the canon of another culture. If you want quick palate cleansers that really force your mind to go in different directions than it's accustomed to, look for short stories and particularly for folklore. Folklore is fantastic because it reads quick and there's a lot of density. It's been distilled over thousands of years of oral tradition that makes it archetypal and captures your imagination really quickly. I could probably ramble about this for an hour, but I think I've already overburdened you with an immense reading list. So I will go ahead and cut that there. But thanks very much for the question, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at everydaynovelist.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. The Everyday Novelist is copyright 2017 J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions, Inc., and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.